I am Betsy Payette. Marilyn McCarney and I are interviewing personnel who were instrumental in developing Renfrew Museum and Park. Today is February 11th, 1992, and Mr. George Buckey is being interviewed. He has been a member of the Renfrew Museum and Park Board since January 17, 1985, and he is currently serving his second term there.
Betsy, looking at your list of questions, not being an original member of the Renfrew Board, I really can't speak to Mrs. Nicodemus's feelings. I only knew her slightly. And of course, I always admired her beautiful home, but it did come as a surprise, I think, when she made it as a gift to the borough, and it was a very pleasant surprise. But I was really not involved in at all with the early days of Renfrew, except to enjoy it as a citizen of Waynesboro. I will say, though, that response to my initial reaction to her will when reading about it in the papers, I felt it was just a tremendous gift and a wonderful idea, and I could not imagine how the borough council would have any hesitations with regards to accepting the gift, especially when arrangements had been made to provide an endowment which would really produce the funds to actually to operate the museum and to keep the property in good order. So I just thought it was an exceptional gift, and one that Waynesboro was very, very fortunate to receive. With my own involvement on the board of Renfrew came through Leroy Maxwell, and I had been, always have been, interested in the industrial history of Waynesboro, and have worked in various ways with regards to promoting the and just for my own interest of documenting some of the industrial history. And Leroy, I think, was aware of that, and possibly that was the reason that he approached me as being a member of the board. And I'm really not certain as to who I followed, whether that was when Dr. Guyton left the community or not. It may have been, but it was Leroy who approached me, and he didn't have a lot of convincing to do, but to actually tell me what was involved and also to encourage me to accept, and which I did. But like everything, I think Leroy made it sound, he said, well, it's not too involved, you know, there's, you won't be too heavily burdened with extra meetings or with work. And like all things that you join, you find out that is never the case. There's always a lot, if you're interested and follow through, there's always a lot more work than what you expected. But that's the fun part of being involved. With regards to the various phases of Renfrew, I was, of course, not involved in the planning or the initial startup. I did read the early planning papers and the recommendations that were made by the various people that had helped and looked at what the museum should be and what should be done. And but the museum as such was, I would say, was very much in place. At the time I came on the board, we were without a curator. Jim Connick had resigned. I think he was filling in on just a part-time basis, as I remember, but just until such time as we were able to find a new curator. And of course, so doing the, I think probably the most important function that the board had when I initially came on was locating and hiring of a new curator. And of course, that with that came James Smith. And that was certainly a very fortunate choice for Renfrew, because through Jamie's hard work and guidance, I think the museum and the farmstead unit has made tremendous progress. I would say with Jamie's arrival, and let's say the most outstanding decision that came and which changed. I think it was a decision that really maybe changed the complexion of Renfrew. Was the was initially the board decision to review a previous decision that they had made to tear down the Fahnestock barn. Jamie asked us to reconsider that that decision and to authorize a study to see whether whether from an architectural standpoint and a historical standpoint, whether the barn was worth saving. And as such, we did authorize an expenditure of a small amount of money for the University of Delaware to have a research team to come and look at the barn. And I think we know the history after that. The story was, yes, it is worth saving. And so the decision to tear it down was reversed. And really that was the, I would say, was the beginning of the idea of the farmstead unit. The next step, of course, after making a decision to save the barn, was the question of how to pay for it and how to the work. Because while the Nicodemus and Geyser endowments were sufficient for operating the museum, it did not provide any large amount of capital funds, and other major capital projects had come into being through particular gifts by individuals. And so then the board looked at the question of raising funds for the barn restoration. And I remember that Willard Ron, as president, asked me if I would chair that campaign, and that brought back my thoughts to what Roy said. Well, you won't be you won't be too involved. And so it was in 1986 that we embarked on the campaign to raise funds for the restoration of the barn, in which we were fortunate enough to raise more than what our original goal was and more than what was really required for the barn, and so which enabled us to restore the smokehouse, the milk house, also to do the excavation of the both the tannery site and the mill site. And of course, before we actually got into that work, came a plan to develop the farmstead unit. And while a number of people, including myself, had input into this idea of the farmstead unit, certainly Jamie Smith was the one that did most of the, really put pen to paper and came up with the more formal actually report we had on the farmstead unit and the vision that he saw, how he saw it developing. And I would say, with some exceptions and maybe a diversion here or there, why we basically followed along that path. Which actually gets us to today, where we have now just, we were, this year we will use the final funds from the 1986 campaign, and those final funds will be on, actually the work is going on now, to prepare the plaques and the, with the artist's conception of the building that stood on that site, and this will be, these will be available for the walking tour. So the farmstead unit, I'd say now, has really completed its first phase, which was really more than what any of us saw at that time. We went further and did more than what any of us felt we were looking at the time we started to raise funds to restore the barn. And I think it also showed us how much more community, how other parts and a broader base of the community could be tied in and would be tied into Renfrew. This was one of the objectives of developing the farmstead unit, was to reach out to a broader, base of people, and to touch on a wider range of interest than what had been touched on before just with the museum. Looks like maybe we better... So now I'd say phase one of the development of the farmstead unit has been completed, and we're really now embarking on long-range planning for, say, the next 7 or 8 years with regards to what will happen to the farmstead unit, such as should we reconstruct or at least in some ways have a representation of the tannery, because all of the money really for the Royer property came from the tanning business of Daniel Royer, and we think that is key. We would like to show that, to be able to demonstrate the use of the tannery, but it's in the floodplain where we have water problems if we try to reconstruct vats, whether the tannery site should be moved and whether we should really have even reconstructed, and where the money will come from, all these things. The same thing with the mill site. All these things are which the interpretive committee is trying to look at now from a long-range standpoint. And with the question of financing, certainly there is some money in the Renfrew budget to be able to do limited work, but any major restoration of any of the other properties will require another fundraising effort, and the timing and how and when to do that all has to be decided in the future. But the first thing the interpretive committee wants to do and then pass along to the board is their thoughts with regards to long-range planning for the farmstead unit for the next 8 to 10 years. With regards to success or failures as far as Renfrew, I would say that as far as I'm concerned, personally saying, it has been very much a success story from the early days. Certainly there have been maybe a few trials and tribulations, but on the whole, it has, we've been very fortunate in the people who have been involved and their ability to look into the future, to adapt to changing maybe needs or changing visions of what Renfrew should be. But on the whole, I think it is, to me, it seems to be still an excellent community resource and has continued to help at a steady pace, particularly besides the farmstead unit. From the farmstead unit, we developed a little more the educational programs to develop, and as the educational programs developed, became the need to create the Renfrew Institute, which was not part of, I was not heavily involved in that in the initial thinking about it. I think this has to go back to Jamie and possibly some other people that were involved at that time. And of course, while we're talking about this is a history of just a Renfrew, but on the eventually, I think it has to be recognized that the Institute is, while not a part of Renfrew, but is very much a companion to it, and it's while it's a different history and it's going to be as different, but it's still, I think, very closely related to Renfrew, as it has taken over many of the teaching activities. It has also, in some ways, maybe created a small problem because of the efforts that are needed to raise funds for the Institute that possibly can drain off some of the opportunities maybe for raising money for the museum. And I think that is something that has to be, it's not a problem now, and it may not be one, but down the road, long range, could be that maybe people only have so much money to give, and whether they will be able to give it to the Institute or to the museum could be of concern. I really don't know of any problems. I guess the one problem mainly has been that sometimes the museum is trying to represent a period in history between 1800 and 1830, and whereas Mrs. Nicodemus's decorative art collection is much wider, covers a wider range, and particularly a later range of time. I really think it's being handled today. It's recognized that Mrs. Nicodemus was not set in her ideas as to just of a period of time for the museum, and that her wishes are generally being followed to show the decorative arts which she so loved, and I think this end is being taken care of in the museum. While some people may say that we've concentrated too much on the farmstead unit in just recent years, and possibly it was true because we only have so many people, so much staff, and their efforts were directed in that direction. But just this past year, with the putting in the climate control in the museum and actually the inside store windows, there's these things have been done, which I think will actually makes it possible for us to look at accreditation someday for the museum, and will, in the long run, will do a much better job of preserving the decorative art items which Mrs. Nicodemus so valued, and including, of course, with that is the climatized storage area that was put up in the barn. And so I think these are all major steps which are going forward to help the museum and its collection, and they're somewhat paralleling. Sure, we had the first couple years where the barn was taking, and the farmstead unit was taking more time, but we've now moved back, I think, into a better balance between the two, and I think that will exist at least for the next number of years until another major, either funds become available one way or the other for another major project. Why don't we just stop for a moment? a third part of the museum, which I'm really not certain about Mrs. Nicodemus's thoughts on the subject, but which had been developed by the early board, was the use of the area surrounding the museum building as a park. And this, of course, has provided tremendous enjoyment to even a different clientele in the Waynesboro population, and just the beauty of the location has been enjoyed by many. In some ways, the park has a battle with the back part of the farmstead or the farm unit, which has been left as a wilderness area. This was decided by the early boards, which I think still serves a very good purpose, where you have trails where people can take a more or less get back to nature, and still it's close to a town area where they can hike, do it, but yet it's not easily accessible to bicycles or other vehicular traffic, and it's and it is in sort of being able to get into the mountains without really going that far. And so you have the more the developed picnic area where people, families can go and have a nice Sunday picnic, or elsewhere people can, who are interested in bird watching or wildflowers or just taking a hike back through the trails, can do on the roughly through the wilderness area. And the museum will have to be careful about how they develop these areas, and there is a park committee, and the park committee is looking at that now to see, well, try to determine about how much usage is good usage. We had this question of the of a pathway coming from Wayne Heights to the Waynesboro school area, which would meant a lot of extra traffic and possible erosion, vandalism, of course maintenance concerns. And while that seems to be a dead issue now, but there's definitely a problem that I see developing, is that Renfrew's eventually going to be enclosed by urban sprawl or urban development, and it may not happen in the next 10 years, but we see with the development along Weldy Road, we see possible development down State Road Hill in this area, that it is going to be a problem, or possible problem. It means the areas for the movement of wildlife and everything which would naturally go along the Antietam, some of this may be hindered. Just the train traffic problems, automobile traffic problems in Renfrew. I think this is going to, as I see it, will be a long-term problem, or at least a long-term concern, which will have to be looked after. It's not an easy one to solve, and it's simply because it will probably take considerable sums of money, and whether that's really going to be available. But at least there will be the problem of trying to protect Renfrew as it is now to the best of the ability, and start to keep some green corridors open. I think with the Renfrew Institute and with the general environmental concerns, at least by many members of the board of directors, I think the necessary thinking and planning and will occur to be able to protect the environmental aspects of Renfrew, and this is particularly with the work of the park committee is trying to move in that direction, and then I think with the Institute, with the environmental study work that they are doing with the school children that hopefully long-term will help protect Renfrew as a resource in the area too. My time on the board of Renfrew, I've always found the board has been very cooperative, good. I always have good working relations. It is not a very formal board, and but from the people are very dedicated and have spent in their own way many hours. I guess I would have to say about as far as key people from the early board, certainly the Leroy Maxwell in my mind was the key player. Once Mrs. Nicodemus had the idea of what she wanted to do, it was Leroy who really carried the ball and laid all did all the work and laid the groundwork and proceeded with being able to arrange it so that Renfrew came into being. And then, of course, while Dick Moore was not a board member, but he was an ex officio one as borough manager, and while I do not have the detailed knowledge of Dick's work, but I just know enough about it from others and to know that he was very, very instrumental in getting Renfrew going in the early days from a borough's involvement, whereas today they are much less involved and are concerned more with other borough problems rather, because Renfrew, generally speaking, runs along on its own and is on its own budget. But my feelings in general that the leadership from the staff side and from the officers and the board of Renfrew has been strong. It's been and each person has contributed it in unique ways, and that's why I'm very happy that you all are taking on the task of providing a history, because we know that we've already lost several members, including Dick Miller, Helen Hoover, who could have provided a lot of historical background that we're going to lose. So I'm very happy that we're getting it now. I think many people do not realize that some of the major projects of Renfrew have come through gifts, and one was from Dan Ruth, whose funds made it possible to restore the visitors center, that is the Victorian barn, into the bottom of it, into the visitor center. Helen Hoover Huffman has made a very substantial gift. The funds are being held now in generating investment income, but they would be available for some other major project if the board should determine. On the other hand, at the moment, because interest rates are down and the investment portfolio, while it has grown nicely and is being held 50% in equities and 50% in fixed incomes, which seems to be an amount that seems to be the right way to handle it. The fixed income gives you a higher rate of immediate return, but with equities paying some dividends, you have a greater opportunity for increased future returns. This would seem to be, to me anyhow, would seem to be a proper balance, yet the portfolio has not had any, there's been no tremendous growth to enable it to outrun was, say, the cost of either operating the museum or as it is tried to increase its services. So there is, it is coming into a period in 1992, it happened in 91 and 92, where the museum is running a deficit budget. It has funds to, reserve funds to cover this, but long range it will either have to, if other gifts are not forthcoming, it may be necessary for them to find additional sources of income to increase the membership, memberships, or to have an annual campaign or to have some type of a fundraising event, or else to determine just how they are going to be able to finance the existing level of activity. And as mentioned, the, of course, Renfrew Institute is now is raising funds separately for their work, and as such, there has not been a lot of effort put into raising funds for the museum, and that is something that the board is thinking about and may will certainly have to be addressed in future years. Of course, there's also a need for a long-range planning with respect to some personnel. Ed Miller is, while having no definite plans, but Ed is at the age where he is thinking about retirement, and of course this will be just as when you have a new curator, having a new park supervisor or is certainly going to be another major change, and one that will have to be coped with, and if not in probably in 1993.
So the way you're getting into this.